Welcome to the UCB Theater. How's everybody doing tonight? This show is not in my backyard.
Yes, this is not in my backyard. We discuss all of the issues going crazy in your local Facebook group so you don't have to. You're welcome. We love to go on Facebook so that you can have a regular life and feel like a normal person.
That's right. So I'm Charlie Todd.
I'm Cody Lindquist. We are a married couple. We like to say that right
away. Get it out of the way. We're married.
Yep.
But we love talking about local politics. Yep. And we love hanging out with comedian friends and journalist friends and politician friends.
Exactly. And Charlie and I are also very involved in our local political groups. I am an elected member of the Community Education Council for District 2 of Manhattan. But all of the views I say tonight are not necessarily reflective of the views of that council. I just say that right away.
And I should disclose that I'm a member of the Transportation Planning Committee for Manhattan Community Board 4, but my opinions tonight do not necessarily reflect those of the full board.
Yeah, don't quote us.
So we have a great show. We have some great panelists here. We've got a politician here tonight, which is always exciting. But first, we like to quiz the audience because we have a very civically minded audience that comes to these shows.
The smartest audience in New York
City. Very New York expert. So we have a little bit of trivia. We're going to play a game on stage in a second. But first, anybody can answer this first trivia question. What is New York City's most expensive neighborhood? Rents and home values.
Tribeca.
Okay. Another Tribeca. West Village. Flatiron. Upper West Side. Haven't heard it yet. Hudson Yards. Who said Hudson Yards? Right there. Hudson Yards. Okay.
A neighborhood that didn't exist 20 years ago. Now the most expensive.
All right. Follow-up question. What is the median price of buying a home in Hudson Yards? Price is Right rules. Can't go over. Median price of a Hudson Yards home. $2.5 million.
$6 million.
$6 million?
$3 million?
$3.5 million. $3.5 million. $6 million is our winner, guys. $6.56 million. Now that's skewed probably by like a lot of $50 million penthouse homes.
There's not even anywhere good to eat there. So I'm sorry.
They got a Sweet Green.
They got a Sweet Green. I don't know. They have a Shake Shack.
They do?
There's a Whole Foods there now.
Okay. This next question is going to be a head-to-head quiz where we'd like to get two audience members on stage, and I'm going to tell you what the category is, and there is a prize.
There is a prize.
The category is New York City geography. New York City geography. If you know, like, the map of New York well. So raise your hand, and you don't have to be an expert. You just have to be slightly better than the other person who raises their hand.
You might be paired against someone who's horrible, and you could win a prize. So come on, be brave, be bold.
Okay, right here, right here.
All right,
you can't volunteer because I think this is your question. We need one more. One more. Right here. Come on stage.
Up.
All right. What is your name?
Oliver.
Okay. What's your name?
Corey.
All right. Welcome,
Corey.
Oliver and Corey, everybody.
Cody
Let's give
Corey
it up.
Over here, the Cody Corey Corner.
Okay.
Cody Corey Corner.
Here's the question: how many islands in New York City can you name? How many islands that are within the,
right, we're gonna
the borders
start.
Of the? Of
we're
going to
start
boroughs.
With Corey, and we'll go back and forth. So you get to go first. Yeah.
Any island.
Manhattan is an island.
Okay, that's one. Only one. Okay, Corey said Manhattan.
Okay.
Roosevelt Island.
Roosevelt Island's correct.
Staten Island.
Staten Island is correct.
Arguably the most
Ward's
famous.
Island.
Ward's Island, getting a little more obscure. I like it.
City Island.
City Island is correct.
Governor's Island?
Governor's Island is correct.
Randolph Island?
Randolph Island, I cannot accept.
For
the steal.
North Brother Island.
North Brother Island,
okay.
Give it up for Oliver, okay. Our champion.
Corey, honestly, with that, were you gonna win? Were you gonna win?
All right, thank you guys. You can both have a seat. And Oliver, your prize is 2 tickets to a future show. Just have to follow us on Instagram and send me a DM.
Those are worth arguably $3 million, depending on the show. You don't know.
And our Instagram is @NIMBY_show. So everyone should follow us on Instagram to find out about future shows. Our next show will be Thursday, August 24th at our normal time of 7 p.m. We're having a late night show tonight right here at the UCB Theater. We also release this show as a podcast, so you can subscribe to a podcast if you can't be here in person. Are you guys ready to meet your panelists?
Yeah.
He is the founder of the Micromobility NYC subreddit and an advocate for safe streets. Please welcome Miser.
He's an Emmy-winning writer who has 2,225 episodes of The Daily Show, please welcome Zubin Pereng.
And finally, he's the newly elected council member for Council District 3, our council member representing Manhattan's Middle West Side. Please welcome Carl Wilson.
Now, Carl, we have to say off the bat, you represent Hudson Yards. Did you get a free apartment when you won?
That's why I ran.
Oh, okay.
Good. Everybody make sure your microphones are turned on.
Well, in New York City.
I was housing insecure, so.
Yes, yeah. Of course, of course.
Make sure your mics are turned on with a green dot. All right, welcome. Anybody in the audience have any islands they wanted to say that didn't get said? Shout it out.
Rikers,
good.
Heart.
Heart is a good one. Fire Island is not in the five boroughs, but what a wonderful island. Okay.
It might as well be. I saw there's Chimney Sweeps Island. Has anyone ever heard of that?
Mary Poppins.
It's like Mary Poppins. That's Mary where Poppins. Mary Poppins famously was filmed. It's a bunch of children with soot on their faces.
All right, I want to start out with something that's been very controversial on Instagram lately. It's a social media creator who goes by Sweet Pea, and he's been cleaning up New York City for views on Instagram. If we could get slide number one, Seamus. Okay, so this is some screen grabs.
Oh, I love
this
it.
This is like a, it was one of those like fire call stations. I don't know, is that fire call boxes? And his recent video shows him cleaning and repainting this FDNY call box. For context, reading from Untapped Cities, before the advent of telephones and much later cell phones, fire alarm call boxes were the main way to get in contact with the fire department. So Sweet Pea has been restoring them without permission, and his viral Instagram videos have set off a huge debate in the comments. Some support his guerrilla beautification, but others say it was prettier before the restoration and that being covered in graffiti and stickers is part of the New York aesthetic and character. Some see a man taking ownership of his neighborhood's beauty, and others see Sweet Pea as a gentrifier, literally painting over NYC history. Panelists, what do you see?
Really, starting off with an easy question.
I love it. I love it. Do it. We've done this, actually. When I worked for my predecessor, we took a bunch of volunteers and just got paint and painted all the boxes without permission. But
as
like
an elected official committing a crime and admitting to it. Note it down.
Well, no, look, it's, you know, somebody, it looks nice. Looks good.
I don't know what they're complaining about. In 3 days, this is going to go back to being full of graffiti and stickers.
Yeah. So I think, like, it almost seems like this guy is trolling, like, the graffiti writer Instagram subculture because everyone is just like, thanks to the blank canvas, bro, you know. But people... This is a particularly good one, I think, because it does look beautiful, and it restored it to, I guess, what it looked like 100 years ago. But he's also doing, like, the relay mailboxes, you know, like the green mailboxes that get covered in stickers, and then when they're done, they're just green. They're boring and green. So I see the argument that maybe it is nice to have some graffiti stickers. It is New York, and if you were faking Toronto for New York, you would definitely put a bunch of stickers in all the mailboxes, and that is our aesthetic. But at the same time, it's a guy going out and cleaning up the city. There's worse things to be an influencer for.
It's
right?
So New York to have somebody complain about everything, right?
Yes.
Like, it's like, I'm mad that it looks too good, or I'm mad that it's dirty. And
like
someone's
going to
be mad.
I like that they call them a gentrifier. Like, that word has lost all meaning, right?
That's
you know?
True.
Like, were there people living in the firebox?
They were. They were priced out because of this guy.
You don't think landlords will see that firebox and then go, I'm jacking the rent up? This is a nice neighborhood now?
Historic block.
Yeah, I think there is an attitude of some native New Yorkers. Is anybody on stage a native New Yorker? No, that's a no. We're all transplants.
Who has lived here for over 20 years?
Okay.
Yeah,
at a certain point,
I'm almost there.
You're
almost there.
You're
I'm almost at 20.
This is the dumbest debate in New York, by the way, the transplant thing. I just want to say, while I have an actual microphone in my hand, that like the number one factor of whether a transplant is where your parents had sex. Like, I don't care at all about where your parents were doing it. I'm just gonna say it.
To me, the transplant the number of years that you need to be to no longer be a transplant is always the number of years right below how many years I've been in New York. So if you've been in New York, anything less than I'm your transplant, anything over, then like, why are we mincing labels here, man? Let's not worry about it.
I like to quote Hellgate on the show. I've done it many times, but their take this year was that you should remove the word transplant from your vocabulary and replace it with fellow New Yorker. And I think that is great. I think anybody who's here is a New Yorker. But I think there are a lot of native New Yorkers who are skeptical of change, sometimes skeptical of bike lanes, skeptical of anything that's new, and they have an attitude of, we can't have nice things. But
you
I think
say.
We can have nice things.
I think it's, yeah, I guess the question is, like, when you see something like that, if he is, like, restoring it to that beautiful red and gold trim, that's one thing. But you don't want someone to put their own spin on it, and now you're looking at somebody having, like, a bunch of different colors and having, like, their own, like, you either want to have the same aesthetic across the board, or you want to kind of have, you need to have one guy doing it. You can't have like 40 people being like, I'll have my own idea of it. And because at that point, now you're talking about
diversity, right? You
don't it's like too much. I don't like the, I don't want to get into a modern art debate when I'm looking at a fire call alarm, you know?
That's true. Okay, so speaking of bike lane, bike lash, a state judge has granted a temporary restraining order that froze plans to build two new bike lanes on the Upper West Side 72nd Street, a bi-directional bike lane, amid an ongoing state and federal lawsuits filed on behalf of a block association and a half dozen disabled local residents. So Miser, you've been following the trend of lawsuits against new bike lanes closely, including some in Astoria. What is going on with everybody suing to stop a bike lane, claiming that it's
following
dangerous?
Them. I've been in them. I think they mentioned me in all four lawsuits to the judge complaining about me. Yeah, thanks. I think that's good. But, you know, it's honestly very weird. It's a good question. What is going on? Because if you think about it and you reduce it to, like, first principles, it's very weird, right? Like, you've got a group of drivers, mostly, and it's always about driving and parking, and they're upset about some effort to keep people safe from them, right? Like, that's who we're trying to protect people from, is the drivers. It's like if you had a bunch of pedophiles go to, like, a police community meeting.
Well, that's a reach, but okay. Continue.
It's an analogy. We're going with that. But, like, they're complaining about the thing that's meant to keep people safe from them. It's like an amazing hotspot to me, you know? And it is about the parking.
We don't think that all drivers are pedophiles. I just want to go on the record.
Just most of them.
Although I did, honestly, when I was a child, I thought that every van that went by was a kidnapper van because I watched too many episodes of Unsolved Mysteries. I don't know if there's any other 90s people here, but that really fucked us all up. We're all really messed up as a generation because
that
of it.
That quicksand, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now we're fighting bike lanes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What's going to happen with this lawsuit? Because people have been trying to get a bike lane on 72nd Street in the Upper West and the Upper East for decades.
I mean, historically, what happens is the judge looks at it and goes, oh, man, like, maybe these people have a point. They filed the lawsuit. And then, like, we go through it a little bit, and they realize they're crazy and throw it out. That's not what happened on 31st Street. Obviously, the judge actually kind of...
31st Street in Astoria, by the way. Big bike lane fight.
Yeah, and, you know, so that's the one historic case where the judge has actually kind of sided with them, but on, like, a technicality. But there's been, like, 12 of these, and they always get thrown out. So, honestly, what will probably happen is they'll just delay it a little, waste some money, and then the city...
Is that the strategy to delay and in the hopes that the bike lane disappears, or are they just trying to keep as much parking as they can for as long as they can?
I mean, delaying and obfuscating is definitely a strategy. I mean, you know, it has already slowed down the progress on lots of other bike lanes because the DOT has to go and jump through hoops to make sure that they have dotted every, you know, I and crossed every T. So the process does get bogged down, and it's very slow.
Isn't that the complaint, though, with everything? Isn't that why people get so mad with liberals in general? Because we slow down everything? Like, we propose things, but then we also slow things down?
But these aren't the liberals that are slow. Those are all MAGA conservatives. Yeah. Like, every one of them was, you know, at a Trump rally the week before.
Yeah, but people do that with housing in their neighborhood, you know. People really love to slow everything down.
Yeah, liberals do swing wildly from innovation in the realm of development and then innovation in the realm of of litigating development, like they'll like creating environmental review boards. I will say I am sympathetic to the idea because the few times I've had a rental car that I've managed to park a rental car on a spot in the street near my apartment, I have thought like I will go to court to keep this for like 30 more minutes. So I'm sympathetic.
But that's
for your
like
one day that you're renting a car.
I was like, this is like I fully identify with them.
But that's like I rent a car in the city once every 3 years. You know, we'll be coming back from a trip, and like I'm dropping the rental car off the next day, and I want to park for one night. And that horrifies me, the idea of having to find a parking space for like once every 3 years. And the fact that people just like park their car and move it for alternate side parking and are constantly fighting that battle, it sounds like a miserable way to live.
But are they fighting that battle, or are they the ones that are leaving their car there all day, every day, and they never have to move it?
Right, yeah.
So that when you rent a car once every 3 years, you can't find a spot.
By the way, there will be a ballot initiative this fall, it sounds like, to try to speed all of this up. So vote for that.
All right, I want to move on to Kathy Hochul, who's been kind of going a little crazy lately with some good stuff. Kathy Hochul and Attorney General Letitia James announced detailed regulations to protect children from social media addiction. Because apparently people are addicted to social media. What? Sorry, that was sarcastic. Apps are barred from sending notifications to minors between midnight and 6 a.m. Children will also be restricted from viewing feeds that are based on a user's previous likes or engagements or algorithmic feeds. Here's a question. Shouldn't every American be protected from social media notifications between midnight and 6 or ever?
All day, yes.
What do we think?
Yes.
Carl, what do you think?
Well, I think in the gay community, that might be a problem. There's a
But you can say that maybe children don't need to be on there between midnight and 6.
Yeah.
That would be funny if she just she has just a carve out for gay men over the age of 18. Chelsea's up in arms about
yeah.
it.
I think personally, if there was no social media between midnight and 6, God, that would be wonderful for everyone involved. I mean, I'm usually asleep during those hours, but I think that would be a big upgrade for society.
But I need to track my Taco Bell order, though. And I need those notifications.
We can't eat Taco 12. Bell now. We might get that.
Oh, yeah.
Never
mind.
Kennedy squirts, as my child calls them. Jeevan, what do you think? What app do you want to have between midnight and 6?
These are the things that when they talk about the... I don't intend to be on social media. Social media is the kind of thing that you just sort of find yourself an hour later suddenly realizing, like, what just happened? It's the kind of thing, like, I don't think anybody actually... I don't know anybody who ever gets off Twitter or Instagram or anything and feels, like, good about what they've just done. And it's not like someone is like, oh, I'd love to be on this. Someone... stop me from eating this delicious ice cream. Yeah. It's always like...
it's like eating a bag of Doritos.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, why did I do this? Yeah. I didn't even mean to. I hate myself. And I think that... I think that it would be... This should not be age limited. I don't know... I do not know anybody. And I include like from me up to my dad in his 80s who was unable to tear their eyes away from their phone.
Yeah.
I do not know how it is possible to have a person who is grown up in this... soup of social media, understand what life was like before social media. I grew up before social media, and I do not remember what it was like before social media.
Yeah.
I think books were something that I used to do.
Your wife's an author, so you
My
better,
wife's an author. I would love to read one of her books one day. If there are TikTok reviews of it, I'm very happy to read through that, to listen to them and see.
Well, you can read between midnight and 6 if this law gets passed. Okay, I want to talk about a quirky thing going on in our neighborhood of Hell's Kitchen. If we could have photo number 2 up, this is the pizza car, the pizza pie. I'm not going to dox 3 people on stage who live very close to this by saying exactly where it is, but it is in Hell's Kitchen. And a man is making and selling pizzas out of the back of his smart car. Reactions on the neighborhood Facebook group have ranged from, cool, I'll have to try it, to not fair to restaurants that pay rent, and no health inspectors, no way. Should we try this? Should Cody, Carl, and I live relatively close
to this. I live right
to
next to this. This is next to my
Have you tried it, Carl?
No, but I have to admit, it's I'm starting to think I want to. I've, but you know, at first you walked by and you're like, who's ever been like, oh, I really would like a pizza out of that guy's trunk?
Yeah.
That sounds really good.
I need this man's trunk.
But, you know, he.
Shops in Hell's Kitchen?
Many pizza.
Yes, yeah, many. But he's having a good time making it, you know, and he has a line, and you know, the business must be good. He's there all the time.
I'm a little confused at how close the dough is to the ground. Yeah. That to me.
Or the exhaust pipe.
Yeah. Well, no, it's turned off. His car's turned off.
Well, he has a generator running. Well, I walked by yesterday, and he has a very loud generator running on the street.
Which, like most food trucks do.
Yes.
Yeah, but not usually pointing right at the food.
That's true. That's true.
I think.
Yeah.
But it's got like. There's an oven, right? This isn't just like on the engine block that he's cooking these things, is it?
No. Yes, he has a pizza oven, I guess, an electric pizza.
I mean, I don't know if I'd do it, but it's kind of hard to fuck up bread and cheese, right? You figure in the worst case scenario.
Have you had Little
fine.
Caesars?
Yes, I grew up in the South. I had Little Caesars every Friday, and it was awful, and I love it. So no, I could definitely.
Let's go get one.
We'll have to make a date and go. Yeah. I'm of two minds about it. One, I think it's better than most of the parked cars on the block because at least it's doing something other than storing someone's personal property for free.
But I also
am sympathetic to the argument that we have a great pizza restaurant around the corner called Sacco that you know Sacco. Pays rent and sales tax and has
it
health
has
inspectors.
Has a health department letter in the window.
So maybe, but I feel that way kind of about all vending. Let's do another vending topic, which is electric food carts. The city has started a pilot program in Flushing Meadows Corona Park to have food cart vendors to use electric batteries rather than gas generators. Charging cabinets will be installed in the park where vendors can swap batteries throughout the day. Less noise, less pollution, and cheaper in the long run. Is this something we should be expanding to every food cart in the city? Can we scale this? What do you think?
By the way, I just want to say, if we electrify every food vending cart in New York City, we would reduce greenhouse gas emissions by over 120,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide, which is the equivalent of taking 30,000 cars off the road each year. Congestion pricing, by the way, takes 67,000 cars off the road daily. So.
Yeah, we always hear these statistics, like all of the environmental statistics about if we do this, we could take this number of cars off the road a year. And I love that with congestion pricing, we just actually did the thing. We just took the cars off the road instead of, and 67,000 a day versus I think this would just be 30,000 a year. But anyway, I food carts are spewing really bad gas or diesel or whatever it is all over the city. It does seem nice if they could go electric.
Yeah, and they're often all like in a line and you have to walk through the cloud of the exhaust, so I think it's a very creative and interesting idea that we should definitely look at how we can do that. We need to be creative about how we're going to solve some of these problems. I think that's great. Now, what do you think about the battery charging stations?
Battery charging stations for bikes?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't. Well, that's come up at our community board lately, and I think.
Everybody saw that, right?
You guys were on that call? Cool.
You guys are watching the YouTube streams of the community board committee meetings, right? I don't want them all over the sidewalk.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think that having a battery swapping stations for deliveristas is a good thing, but I think they should be kind of like gas stations where they're maybe not on the main thoroughfare. I mean, we don't really have that many gas stations in Manhattan, but when we did, they were like on 11th Avenue, so I think maybe not in the middle of a busy sidewalk that's clogged.
Man, every time I hear these ideas, this is just China's century, isn't it? This is they're pumping out like a million electric cars like every day. And over in America, we're like, if we can just get three of these food carts to be electrically generated, we can save 6 metric.
Yeah, but
should we do it? We don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. just thinking about doing it kind of is self-environmental activism, isn't it?
I think we did a good job. Why don't we do it? Sue each other a bunch and then slow it down.
China, please.
All right. I brought up congestion pricing, so I want to have a little congestion pricing corner. A new study revealed that since congestion pricing was implemented, there has been almost no change in the availability of parking north of 60th Street, just outside the congestion relief zone. It remains hard to find parking, but no different than before. This is yet another bad, scary thing that congestion pricing haters warned would happen that never came to pass. Miser, you've often advocated for expanding the congestion relief zone to other boroughs. What would you propose? What's your vision?
Oh, the vision is just more zones. I mean, it's real simple. You know, I'm a big fan of the idea that when you do something and it works, you just keep, you do more of it, yeah. Which I know is
wait,
like a
what?
New
wow.
concept.
Tell us about this
oh my
plan.
Gosh.
Yeah. But, you know, like, I'm not surprised also that they found this, that it didn't make parking harder in the, you know, areas around the zone, because that was always, like, a bullshit thing, right? Like, obviously bullshit. Like, the idea that drivers were going to drive all the way to the city and then park outside the zone and then get on transit for $3 so they could save $6, like, come on. I mean, these are people that are fundamentally doing this out of laziness and convenience. Like, that was never going to happen. And, you know, so it's kind of obvious, but
We have a zone in Western Queens and Western Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's very important, by the way, that we have more zones and not just a bigger zone. This is kind of wonky, but you don't want to have just a bigger zone. They actually studied this, and the original plan for congestion pricing was going to be all of Manhattan. And they found that wouldn't deter people driving from, like, the Upper West Side and the Upper East Side. They'd still drive in their giant, you know, black SUVs down to Times Square or whatever. So they made the line at 60th so that, because it's where the edges are is where the tolling happens. So you want to just have, like, a network with as many, like, edges as possible so that people actually hit them when they're driving around.
You should also have a surprise roving zone that is in a new area every week or so.
Changes every 10 minutes.
You don't know where you're. Suddenly your house is a congestion zone. Yeah. It's like, sorry, buddy, $12.
This story was really crazy to me. Gothamist did a story on a pilot program in Prospect Heights to limit alternate side parking to one day a week instead of two in the hopes that drivers will better comply with the promise the pilot made be made permanent if they do. DSNY reports that each week 500,000 car owners don't move their cars during alternate side parking, preventing street sweepers from cleaning more than 3,000 miles of streets. Agency officials are calling on Albany to pass legislation allowing cameras on street sweepers to find motorists that don't move. So if we're able to ticket 500,000 vehicles a week, that would be $25 million a week for the city, or it would mean clean streets. Both seem good, right? Seems Carl, like a win-win. It's crazy to me that in this article, they're like, oh, by the way, 500,000 people every week don't move their cars. I'm like, that's fucking crazy.
I think they're all on my street.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
Yeah. So but Carl, most people, they bake in the price of a ticket, yeah. And they're like, it's cheaper than getting a garage.
Right. Business. Yeah.
If you get two $50 tickets, you know, or four a month, that's $200 and not a $600 garage.
That's
but Carl, I'm curious about this like, I saw you snapping your fingers with cameras on street sweepers, which would be amazing. But we have to ask Albany for that? That's one of those dumb things where, like, Albany approves if we could put a camera on our city's fleet of street sweepers?
Yeah, camera enforcement is all in the Albany bucket, even to, like, to put the... Because there's also, you know, been talk about doing this for bike lane enforcement, for drivers that encroach on the bike lane or drive down it to get around the traffic jam. All of that is legislated in Albany.
Can the city council pass a bill saying... Nah, it's ours. Like, how do we get around that? We have to convince Albany to
Charlie's
give up.
Charlie's available to write legislation for you, by the way. Nah,
yeah, the home rule.
It's
a big debate, but let's try it.
Yeah,
we're plotting revolution here.
It's just crazy that if we want to put a camera on a street sweeper, like we care about what somebody in the Finger Lakes votes on. Like, you know, like.
I mean, that's the beauty of the stickers, though.
Yeah,
right? Like the stickers don't give a fuck.
I love the stickers.
Or how much money, like. You know, a lot of times the people don't move, and, like, you know, billionaires just get tickets on their cars because, like, what do they care about a $50 fine? You know, they just throw it out. But the stickers make a problem for everybody. Doesn't matter how much money you have, scraping a nasty sticker off your car.
Yeah. So to give the news on this, the Department of Sanitation is bringing back these tough to remove shame stickers that Miser's talking about. Inspectors slap these on the windows of cars not cleared from the path of New York City street sweepers. The council gave the go ahead to start using the stickers again after stripping the department of the ability in 2011 amid complaints that the stickers were too hard to remove. Which is kind of the point.
The people who were like, I left my car there and it's too hard to remove the sticker.
That was the point.
I love the stickers. I think it's great. I think it's great. And I think we should rotate, like, what we say on the sticker. Like, you suck. Or, you know, we should have, like, design competitions where we ask people to design the stickers to maximize the shame.
But that's like the question is like, should the city look at this as like a revenue opportunity, or is it something the city wants to stop? You either charge a fee or a fine that like justifies just having that, or you make the street sweepers big enough to sweep up the cars as they go through. It's got to be one or the other, I think. If you're either a sticker, if you're doing a sticker there, you just break the window. Just like make it really difficult like, for the car. You know?
Love the idea of like monster truck.
Do something, yeah.
Street sweeper.
The car bonus, the children of New York City would love it.
Yes.
They would love it.
This idea you had about these cars, if they're going to be on the road, should be like pizza distributing cars. Actually, I think there should be something where if a car's on the street, they have to roll the windows down and have something in the car that anybody can just reach in and take out. There has to be a hot tub.
Provide a service.
Candy. There's be something for everybody if you're going to be there. I think
little
that's
free libraries in someone's SUV.
A library,
like
yeah. Yes.
What if the street sweepers had pizza ovens?
That'd be cool.
It's just like running up to them as like going through.
Probably serving little Caesars. That's all they can handle. But it is interesting. Usually, you know, the response we get is it's too expensive to do these things. But when it's like, just put a damn camera on a street sweeper and make $25 million a week, and everyone will be able to learn how to read because we can hire enough teachers. What are we thinking?
Yeah.
Come on.
And to your question about fines, like I like fines like this because people who complain about fines, like people complain about red light cameras, for example, right? And they're like, oh, it's a cash grab. They're just trying to take money. It's like, no, just don't run red lights. And that's what we're trying to do. Like the perfect outcome of a red light camera is it never issues a single ticket, and we solve the problem of red light running. So the perfect scenario for this would be people move their cars and our streets are clean.
All right, we want to go to photo number three, please. We want to talk about the mayoral uniform. Last month, Mayor Mamdani kicked off public pool season by jumping in a pool in his suit. The man hasn't taken his suit off for our heat waves this summer, which means he isn't ever taking it off. Is this genius branding or a boring wardrobe? So, Carl, do you feel pressure to wear suits more often now that you're a council member? Let us know. You are wearing a suit.
I feel very attacked right now.
No tie, though. No tie.
It's summer. I respect that the mayor keeps the suit on. I actually, you know, I call it my
work.
I call
too, it, by the way.
Yes, he is. Yeah. Thanks for the reminder.
It's true. Carl is a very young city council person, but the mayor is actually younger than you.
We're the same year.
Yeah.
But his birthday's in October.
It's
mine's
neck
in February.
And neck.
I think it's.
It's neck and neck.
No, look, I like that he wears the suit. Listen, I feel powerful in my suit. You know, I call it my work drag. You know, I have to. My background was in theater and stuff, and whenever I would put the costume on, is when I really knew who it was. For me, it's an important part of the gig.
How many suits do you have? Do you have to go out and buy a bunch?
I have had to buy a few more.
I always I'm an actor, and I always had one blazer that I got from somebody, and that was the one when they're like, you're a businesswoman in an audition. I would show up in the one.
I have emergency suits at my office, like encased in glass that I'll break open in case I need to go somewhere.
That's a plot on Veep. Yeah. Danny has emergency suits.
Look, respect. I don't know if I would have jumped into the pool, but also it's like, what's he going to put like a bathing suit on? That's a little...
Well, Brad Hoyland like, Siegel was next to him, and he was wearing a swim shirt, right?
He was.
I think...
I think Carl has an opinion about that.
I love Brad.
Friend of the show, Brad Hoyland Siegel. I think that Mamdani's... I think this is great. I mean, when we were just in South Carolina, and I remember a year ago when we were in South Carolina visiting family, there was a lot of family members asking me, is Mamdani going to win? What's going on with Mamdani? And this year, people were saying, like, did you see Mamdani in the pool with the suit on? Like, it's breaking through. And I think, you know, having a wardrobe and having the same thing.
It is interesting how seeing, like, these, like, young brands of socialists who, like, Mamdani and Hassan Piker are, like, all going towards that dressing in suits. And then you see, like, people like John Fetterman like drifting away from the left, like dressing like he's sort of like
that's a
sweatshirt.
Total opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah, it's a good way of like understanding like where you are in the political spectrum, depending on how you know like how much of like a sort of like a homebound ogre you are versus how much of a like snappy you know bonobo stresser you are. I like it.
All right. Well, speaking of John Fetterman and shorts, I wanted to talk about a story Gothamist ran this month, asking if it's okay for men to wear shorts to the office. given that it's been so incredibly hot out this summer, should we make wearing shorts normal to work in this
city? It's not even appropriate on stage, apparently. Yeah.
You know, my rule for shows, for improv shows or shows like this, is if it's over 90, I am 100% wearing shorts.
A nice short. You're not wearing an athletic short.
But I wish there was a judgment. I wish that Miser didn't have to look around and be like, man, I'm the only one in shorts.
I don't think there's judgment. Yeah. You look great. You look great.
We only got mine out here.
But what is it about short? You know, like, I feel like women can wear shorter things in the summer. I know that certain cultures they can't.
Juman, you're a snappy dresser. You own a shoehorn.
Have you ever worn shorts to the Daily Show office?
Never.
In 2,225 episodes, no.
Not
shorts.
Not once. No. I mean, you can wear what you wear. I'm very like traditionalist about it. I feel like you should, you know, if I'm like going out to the park on a day where it's like 95, yeah, I'll wear shirts. But I have like linen long pants to avoid showing my knees. I have like long shirt linens. It feels, and again, anyone can wear what they wear. It feels a little too casual, a little too like I'm not put together. I don't know what my life is about. Does that make sense? And anyone can do what they want. Anyone can embarrass themselves however much they want in their lives, but it's just not for me.
Dude, I got like 3,000 posts on Reddit. I like so in the gutter already. We're not getting any lower.
Juman, I will say two out of the five panelists are wearing very snappy Argyle socks right now.
Oh, we are.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Are. Check that out.
So shout out to you guys.
Well, that's the other problem with shorts, though. It's because it's like, what socks do I wear?
What socks do you wear? What
work?
Shoes? Yeah. Do you have an appropriate shoe?
And like,
shoe?
How high up does the sock go?
That's true.
It opens very difficult
does every,
debates.
But I think the city council specifically has like some more younger people now. You've got some younger people in there. Are people mixing it up and wearing different things?
Yeah, there's a few members, but you know, I'm also I'm kind of a traditionalist too. I feel like we're, you know, I'm in the chamber. You don't wear a tank top.
Yes. Yeah.
Have some respect. Yes. I'm in the suit.
We went straight from shorts and a nice shirt to tank top.
Yeah.
It's a slippery slope.
It's the same thing, yeah.
All right, yes. We want to talk about sharks. It's officially Shark Week, and according to the Parks Department, there have already been 45 beach closures at NYC beaches this summer due to shark sightings. Shark drone patrols are split between the NYPD, the FDNY, and the city's emergency management agency, and some are arguing that increased surveillance isn't necessarily keeping us safer. Are we better off not knowing that these sharks are close by? Are we closing the beaches just because we can now see the sharks with our drones?
Well, there's a bunch of sharks at City Hall, too.
Oh! Hey.
We should close up there, too.
Can the drones attack the sharks?
I don't think the drones can attack the sharks, no. Just see them.
I mean, if the drones were preventing shark attacks, I think that would be the best use of the drones. I don't know why they're just hovering over me like, hey, you're getting beaten by a shark. Hey, watch.
Basically, the drones are there. There's three city agencies that are working in tandem, and then they signal the lifeguards to call everyone off. But they're you know, it's not like the sharks are like in the middle of where people are swimming. It's if they're off.
I mean, why are we scared of sharks? Sharks really don't attack people. I'm much more scared. The other day I was riding my bike and a pigeon flew straight into my fucking face.
That means you're a New Yorker now, Miser. You're officially a New Yorker if a pigeon goes in your face.
Yeah, exactly. The sharks are the least of my worries, to be honest.
I mean, I don't like how the shark drones bleed into the water. I feel like that makes the situation worse than it does makes them better.
This question was very relevant because we just spent a long time in South Carolina and we just watched Jaws with our kids. That movie holds up.
I'm sure.
That's a scary movie.
All right, another animal topic, carriage horses. Earlier this month, there was a marathon session of testimony at City Council regarding Romanche's Law, which would end the carriage horse industry and is named after the 18-year-old who died in a carriage horse incident this spring. Carl, you're one of the co-sponsors of the bill. Is this going to finally pass after years and years and years of people trying to stop this industry?
Look, you know, I think the bill definitely has momentum right now. There's a majority of members signed on. The public is with us. It has like an 80% approval rating. It's, and you know, people see it with their own eyes. They see horses limping. They see them underfed. They see them nose to tailpipe in traffic. It's, you know, it's time to move on and do the right thing. And I think we will likely see this, I hope, in the next couple months.
And this bill doesn't have like a phase, I mean, I think there's like funds towards finding jobs for that workforce, but it doesn't have a like, we're going to put little electric buggies in Central Park, right? Because earlier
no, that's not in there, but yeah. They're working out some of the transitional language for both the workers and the horses, yeah. Too. But it's time. And I love people, you know, the arguments, oh, but it's nostalgic and, you know, it's a great, you know, this has been a way people have worked forever. And it's like, well, so we're like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we're telephone operators, you know?
It's like in a sweatshop?
Yeah, exactly.
Nostalgic.
Yeah, but I actually think the bill is, you know, there's a whole coalition of sanctuaries that have come to the table to work with us to find safe and healthy ways to retire these horses. And I think there are options for us to, for the transit workers as well. So I think the time is right. I hope we're gonna get this done.
Jube, your office is right next to a lot of stable. Yeah, we can applaud that. Your office is right next to the stables. Will you miss your neighbors if they?
Our offices are right between the horse stables and a Subway sandwich shop. One of our writers, I'm Tim Carvel, once said like we literally spend our days smelling shit sandwiches every hour every day. So I'd be very happy to get rid of these stables.
I went to a birthday party a couple times at the stables. Did you guys know they do birthday parties?
No.
It's depressing.
Wow. Yeah.
Talk about a real depressing birthday. You get a bunch of hats on a 2-year-old and then you bring them up and down the block on a horse.
That particular stable I think has since closed, but they did like little miniature pony rides. It was kind of cute, but yeah.
With a horse? Was it?
Our 3-year-old was wearing a cowboy hat. I don't know.
Did the kids have to like work the carriage for a while?
Yeah,
did they have to like go out to Central Park?
They gave him a pack of cigarettes. And
wow,
a
that seems
the other thing.
Yeah.
I
kind of
it was the best birthday party they've
the,
ever had.
The other thing about the horses that I just, you know, if you really think about, imagine they weren't there, and then somebody was like, "I've got this great business idea. We're going to do these rides through Central Park, but I'm going to attach it to a 2,000-pound prey animal, and we're just going to let that lead us through the park."
And they're
gonna, right? Yeah. The city would definitely approve that.
And they're going to shit all over the park drive. Like, we'll have a bag, but most of it will get on the road. All right, I want to talk about AI real estate listings. The city is we can do, like, a photo 4 up here. The city is The city is moving to require rental listings to disclose photos that have been altered using artificial intelligence or other digital tools. This practice is sometimes called house fishing. This photo from the New York Magazine story about the issue caught my eye. The weirdest bed I've ever seen. For the podcast listener, it's a bed that has a little bed attached to it that could be for a dog or a small child, but it looks like one continuous piece of L-shaped bedding. So virtually staged apartments, that's been a thing for a long time, like the Photoshop adding in the furniture, but is AI taking it too far? Should it be banned?
Well, if anyone's looking at this shit and going, yeah, that's a real place, like, I don't know.
I mean, that looked like every dorm in my college right there.
That's true. So. They were like, it's a 3-bedroom apartment. See, there's 3 beds.
That's the home for somebody that wears shorts.
Yeah. Or it's like if you get into a fight with your spouse, they have to sleep on the little tiny bed.
Yeah, the shame. Yeah.
No, but look, we're in really uncharted territory with a lot of the AI stuff. And I think we have to be really smart about how we are regulating this because it can fool people pretty easily. And, these kinds of our practices are absolutely something we should be taking a hard look at to see if this is right for consumers. And, we're in a weird place.
I also want to point
that
out,
looks like a weird place.
This apartment doesn't look that good. Like, if AI was going to do it, like, make
that's
it look
the
better.
Thing. Like, yeah,
couldn't they
like,
just send
kind
like,
of shitty? Like, yeah.
Can
yeah.
I not generate bed friends?
What was the prompt for this one?
Was give me a murder apartment.
I need a bed and a smaller bed at the.
Speaking of AI, I want to talk about a new billboard in Hell's Kitchen. Can I get photo number 5 up, please?
Oh, God.
The windowless AT&T building on 10th Avenue added a billboard earlier this year. The current billboard is for some shitty AI company and provocatively commands, "Stop hiring humans." Regardless of the gross content, should buildings be able to put advertising on the side of them? Charlie has filed a complaint with the DOB and emailed his council member's office, but so far has gotten no traction.
So,
what?
So I'm going to lobby him live on stage now. Carl, you live near here. Can we get this billboard down?
Office hours are 10 a.m.
Thank you, Carl.
But it is interesting.
No, we looked into this, and it does appear to have appropriate permits.
Even though it's a residential neighborhood. I mean, obviously it's this giant AT&T building where there's no windows in it. It's just telecom wires. But yeah, it's just interesting to me that they didn't used to have a billboard.
It just appeared. And it's like the most dystopian, like, billboard.
But
like,
the building already looks dystopian.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a horrible building.
It matches, like, an anti-human ad matches the decor of the building. It feels like a Borg cube anyway. So I'm not...
I would argue the advertisement is not doing its job. You walk by it and you go, oh God, the AI's awful. I want it to go away.
But we're talking about it, though. You know?
I very much like the AI ads that are very just openly honest about, like, we are going to take your jobs. We're gonna take your children. This is the future. I don't like the ones like that that Orchid ad that came out the other day where it's like, we're going
to
be like real like sassy bitches.
People.
Yeah, they're going to like get your relationship on track. This thing where it's like, no, you will be powering us in the future. Your body will be fuel for us. This is honest. I like it.
Call 1-800-DEATH-TO-HUMAN for more
information. Yeah, it's a question like now or later, you're jumping into the blender. So it's just choose it, choose when. It's honest.
And I just hate that building. I do live across the street from it. It's like, it's over on 53rd and 10th Avenue. It's this giant AT&T, like, unbelievably, and it's been there forever. So, you know, it's outdated, the technology. And I look on the other corner at a building the same size that's full of apartments.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, this is not a good use of space. That could be that dense and be all apartments.
The show's really living up to the NIMBY tag. We're NIMBYing individual buildings.
Yeah. I think there's some kind of like CIA, like, heart of the internet inside that building. Like, there's.
I mean, wasn't that like historically proven that they had these big buildings here in Manhattan that were just funneling like every single call and tweet and everything straight to the NSA?
It's like an OG data center?
Yeah, but like it's maybe it's like the Bush years where they were listening to like every
Patriot
conversation
Act stuff.
You had on the toilet.
And now we can't even get a fucking camera on a street sweeper to give a ticket.
All right, speaking of AI taking jobs, I want to talk about AI in the classroom. If we could have photo number 6 up, please. Reading from Gothamist, an aborted plan to use a lifelike robotic teacher's assistant in Western New York school districts has prompted calls for new limits on artificial intelligence in schools. Sally, a brunette, silicone-skinned android powered by AI, was set to debut in this fall in Salamanca High School in Western New York. The robot was to have been manufactured by Realbotics, which has a sibling company that produces sex dolls. The company promised the robot would have natural conversation, facial expressions, and real-time interaction to create engaging, hands-on learning experiences. The CEO also emphasized that the effort to introduce the robot into the classroom is wholly separate from any adult products business. The price tag for the robot and related software that allows students to interact with Sally's avatar on their laptops came to nearly $58,000. What the fuck are we doing?
They promise natural conversations. What? That is so scary. It's terrifying.
I know this
she looks really concerned,
student.
Though,
this
about her students.
This chatbot has Mar-a-Lago face.
Yes.
She legit does.
It's clearly...
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but there's some triangle or something happening here.
Yeah, it's clearly a sex doll that they are trying to repurpose. Sex doll sales are down. Let's get them in the classroom.
The idea of the idea of a sex bot being manufactured and then being given the option of you can either be a sex bot or a public school teacher. I'll be the sex bot. The public school makes how much money? No, I'll be the sex bot.
And that's what's going going to happen at the school anyway. Let's be honest.
So. I just don't know. How does it get to this? Like, we're having, you know, debates now, and Cody's on the Community Education Council, and there was talk of, like, an AI high school, and I think that's not happening. But there's a big discussion about how much technology should be in schools and if AI should be in schools. But how does it get to we're having sex bots as our teacher's assistants?
I mean, I got to say, I was a terrible student. If I could have fucked my teacher, I would have paid a lot more attention.
Yeah, I don't understand, man. Do you want the stock market to keep going up or what? Like, yeah. You got to put AI somewhere, man. Entire economy.
The lives of the children?
I think we're at a phase where it's all the wild, wild west. And everyone's like, let's try this thing, let's try this thing. And people are just literally throwing anything against the wall. But it's crazy that the amount of money that is being spent on this shit is insane.
Yeah.
Again, it's like, who's in charge? Who's having the conversation? Why isn't someone going, hey, sorry, question, what? What the fuck? This seems like a weird, bad idea.
Yeah, it's like I was saying earlier. I mean, we're in uncharted territory with this stuff. Technology is improving and improving, but, you know, changing rapidly, very fast. So we have to be really smart and careful about where we're deploying it, especially in schools and with our children.
Well, one of the conversations we've been having about technology is that, you know, we shoved all this technology earlier, you know, decades ago at children. We were like, oh, we have computers, we have whatever, take this. And the technology companies were giving all this technology, saying it's going to revolutionize education. And really, they wanted to get kids addicted to their iPads or their smart boards, all that. So they wanted to create users so when they graduated, they wanted Apple products or Google products or whatever. And there has been no research, none, that says it actually helped education. And as a matter of fact, it's saying that it's hurt education to have all of these technologies in schools. So now we're doing the same mistake over again.
But this is
But
the
have
research.
They measured sex bots
no,
in the classroom?
No, they have not. That's true. There have,
so,
been no,
you know.
There have been no studies. You're right. I stand corrected.
This could be the key to the...
It could be the key.
This is the research. Yeah. Will our children learn geography if they ask a sex bot where Africa is and the sex bot says, I don't know, for $19.99, I will... I don't want to say what the...
All right,
this is getting weird.
We want to talk about an interesting story from Central Park this week. A high-profile married lawyer was recently caught on camera making out with his much younger colleague in Central Park. The pair were kissing on a bench in the park as a camera-wielding TikTok user interrupted them by hollering, "Get a room, there's kids around." After the video went viral, the lawyer was put out on leave pending an investigation. Should you be allowed to make out in Central Park without having your life ruined by a TikToker?
I just want to say, I wrote this question. Charlie is not asking, you know, for his own personal reasons. I wrote the question.
I mean, so if you have to watch the TikTok, but the guy very aggressively is like getting up in the faces of these two people who are making out on a bench. The TikToker didn't know that it was an affair or that it was an illicit inter-office romance. What do we think about making content by shoving cameras in people's faces? Now, I did do that for about 20 years, but my cameras for my YouTube channel, Improv Everywhere, please subscribe. We're usually hidden camera, but it is funny. Like, the main thing, whenever I've done stuff with, like, a brand or I made a TV show for Disney Plus, like, the lawyers want release forms from everyone, you know, like we're shooting something in Times Square and the Disney lawyers are like, you got to get a release from everyone. And I was always like, really? There's an expectation of privacy in Times Square. You're in a crowd of 20 people reacting to my comedy bit. And the lawyers would always be like, you don't know if that person could be someone on their lunch break who's having an affair with someone. And then they show up in the back of your video and it ruins their life. And that's literally what I had multiple lawyers tell me at different projects. And then that's what happened.
I love every lawyer. Like, are you speaking from experience?
There's a lot of detail. A lot of detail in that example.
What if they're at Sparrow in Times Square and they're buying a slice with their girlfriend?
Or at the pizza. Or the pizza car.
Yeah,
pizza
that's true. The pizza car. A lot of illicit affairs there.
Is that something you can sue for if somebody exposes you committing an affair?
I mean, you can say, I'm mad that you didn't get a release form from me in the background of this video and I'm suing you. But the reason I'm mad about it is because... You ruined my life.
I mean, a law firm partner is not gonna get the money's worth suing like a TikTok guy. I don't think so. I don't know if he's gonna get the proper satisfaction. I remember I saw one of these TikTok pranksters whose I think entire thing was just coming up to people in the mall and just kind of like shoving them and just kind of like pissing them off.
Well, that's assault.
He was like doing that, and
hilarious.
Then one guy in the
it's
mall.
It's a break, bro.
It was he was and one guy in the mall like who he didn't know just came up to do that just pulled a gun out and like shot him in the leg.
Oh jeez.
And he went and like there's a news story about it, and you have never read so many comments demanding that the guy shot him again, demanding that the guy like not make it out. It was the one time I've seen a shooting where I've been like, yes, this is what a gun is for.
We should disclose that you used to be a lawyer.
I used to be an attorney, and yeah. If I would have defended that man, the shooter, to my dying day.
But it's a criminal defense lawyer. You're
absolutely
just
pro bono. I would have done all of it. It is very much like this trend where like you're getting clout by just going up and just like randomly like assaulting or attacking or bothering people in the street, I think this is shitty.
I do. I mean, look, it sucks the guy's having an affair, and I hope his wife gets everything in the divorce because he, you know, fuck that guy. But, you know, you should be able to make out with someone in Central Park and not have someone come right. I mean, they were sitting on a bench.
You should be discovered by your spouse hiring a private investigator
yes.
who takes pictures, shows them the photos, like, yeah. you're not going to want to see this, but here it is. You want that kind of...
Agree.
So, Miser, you do make content where you approach people on the street. You've had some videos go viral lately. Now, you're approaching people who are doing truly bad things, like parking their giant SUV on a sidewalk or blocking a bike lane. But do you worry about sticking a camera in the faces of the crazy guy in the giant truck who's blocking the bike lane, that he's got a gun or that it could go further south?
I mean, it's America. I just assume they have a gun. But... you know, I don't actually do that much. You know, I posted a few encounters like that when somebody's like really making a dangerous situation. There's one that went somewhat viral recently of a guy with a lifted pickup truck that was parking in the daylighting, which really pissed me off because we fought for those after kids were run over in Astoria to see some like sociopath just park some like, you know, literal monster truck, and it just kind of pissed me off. I probably should be a little chiller about it, but...
Have you ever witnessed any affairs in the monster truck?
I don't think that guy's been laid in decades.
Shame sticker. All right, we're going to wrap up, but there's one question that I want to get to that has been really making me chuckle all week. Last week, a woman was arrested in Bushwick after police accused her of stealing $4,000 worth of rugs that she had thought had been discarded and left on the street up for grabs. A small business owner was airing the rugs out overnight after a flood in her store, reported them stolen after she returned the next morning and the rugs were gone from her stoop. The business owner eventually dropped the charges once the situation was explained to her and the rugs were returned. How long can something be left on the street before it's considered up for grabs?
Was it on the stoop or the street?
It was both, on the stoop and the street.
I think street is fair game if it's been there overnight.
No, a rug anywhere on the sidewalk or the stoop is just, that's discarded. It's gone. 1 second.
Yeah.
$4,000? How many rugs were in this?
The fact that she left $4,000, it was like $4,500 worth of rugs. And she was like, you know what? I'm going to leave them overnight. I'm like, bitch, no. What is wrong with you? And the worst thing was the woman that stole them was like a decorator. And she was like, oh, okay. Look, these are great. And she like gave them to clients and had the clients clean them. And then police hunted her down, which... Who are these police? They should come work everywhere in the city. I love that they're like out there doing real detective
work. Yeah, they should track down people that steal bikes on the street.
Yeah. Sounds great. But she was horrified that she was accused
of stealing.
Don't mess around
with the rugs.
I remember when we were getting rid of stuff when we lived near Penn Station, and we would just put it on the stoop and it would be gone in 15 minutes, like a pair of shoes, something good. And it was like, oh, cool, someone...
I once saw a mattress outside of my apartment in Queens that somebody had wrapped in a giant plastic bag and wrote bed bugs on the side in spray paint. And somebody took it in like 15 minutes.
Wow. Oh, no. So, what's the craziest thing you've all taken off of stoop?
I've never taken anything off of stoop. I once put out what I thought was a pretty attractive coffee table, and it just stood out there on the street for like 4 days, and I've never... felt so...
You should have put a bed bug sign on it.
Wow. How humiliating.
It was so embarrassing. I didn't even want it, and I was so humiliated about it.
I want to preface this by saying Charlie put a bunch of used CDs out once, and they were gone very quickly, so this must have been a bad...
I guess it was, yeah.
CDs are back now, too. All right, well, it's about time to wrap up. I want to know if you guys have anything you'd like to plug. Miser, anything you'd like to plug? People should subscribe to your subreddit, right?
Yeah, we have a subreddit. It's Micromillie NYC, if anyone even knows what that is. yeah, join. I'm sure some people hear from it.
Do you have anything you want to plug?
Watch The Daily Show.
Would
daily,
you like to plug your wife's new book?
I would. I didn't know if that would be okay,
absolutely.
But I would like to. Yes, if you have, if anybody has a middle grade reader, my wife, Lindsay Champion, has a wonderful three-book series about a middle school production or middle school drama club that you're doing a production of Marie Curie that she completely made up, my wife, and has a bunch of very fun songs. And it's about the crew and the cast coming, getting in a fight with each other. It's called Cast versus Crew, a very funny three-book series. The second book just came out. It got a Kirkus Star, which is a very, very high critical acclaim.
Our 12-year-old read it in one day, so
it's
that's
very
more
good.
Important than the star.
Yes, it is. Honestly, middle graders that they've read it, they love it. Yeah. It's very cool. It's very funny. Cast versus Crew, check it out.
Carl, any plugs, any stand-up appearances coming up?
Yeah, coming to a block association near you. You can find me there. No, but you know, you can follow me on Carl M. Wilson on Instagram and Twitter. But I will plug that before I came here, I was at an organizing meeting with an organization called Vote Blue. We have midterm elections coming right around the corner, and it's very fun to sit and joke and complain. But you get the policies you want when you elect people who are going to do it. And by the way, our country's like in peril. So please, there's not New York, where we live, is we have decent representatives, but just up the Hudson Valley, you know, we don't. And if we're gonna win the House back and we're gonna have any level of power or check, we've gotta go out there and knock on doors and get those people elected. And we have districts right here in New York that need your help. So please, join me, come on a bus, look at Vote Blue, or look at, there's other organizations that do it, but join me on a bus. They're going every Saturday in September out to these districts, and let's elect people who care about our democracy and protect our democracy from the asshole that is the president right now. Come with me, come join me.
So thank you guys for coming out. Our next show, August 24th at 7 o'clock. Panelists to be announced, follow us on Instagram for that information. We want to thank UCB Theater for having us here. We want to thank Tyler Walker, who does our theme music. And we want to remind everyone, to echo Carl's point, to vote in midterm elections. Thanks, everybody.
Everything's wrong with the universe. Accepting change is hard. Everything's bad and it's getting worse.